नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Once there was a devotee doing class in Sydney. He was there for some time, and every day devotees, you know, because they were doing service, they couldn't attend the class, so they'd stick their Walkmans there to take the class. And each day it was like increasing more and more Walkmans and less devotees in the class. So one day what he did is he came and he stuck a Walkman there and played a tape for the class so all the Walkmans could record his tape. So every time I see some recording device there, it reminds me of that story. Bhuvi Kuru Punya Tirta Saranani Vishayo Vimadas Bhuvi Kuru Punya Tirta Saranani Vishayo Vimadas Bhuvi pura punya tita saranani rishayo vimadas Ta uta bhavat padambuja rido aga vid angri jala Uta bhavet padam buja riroka bidang brijala Ta uta bhavet padam buja riroka bidang brijala Ta uta bhavet padam buja riroka bidang brijala Uta bhavat padam buja riroga bhidang ripajala Ta
uta bhavat padam buja riroga bhidang ripajala
Tathati
sakrin
manas
vai
kya atmani
nitya
sukhe Hati sakrin manastaya atmani nitya sukhe
Hati sakrin manastaya atmani nitya sukhe
Hati sakrin manastaya atmani nitya sukhe
Hati sakrin manastaya atmani nitya sukhe
Na
Na
Puna
Puna
Upasate
Upasate
Purusha
Purusha
Sara Haravasatan Napurna upasate purusha sara haravasatan Napurna upasate purusha sara haravasatan Ati sakrin manastaya atmani nitya sukhe
Ati sakrin manastaya atmani nitya sukhe
Napurna upasate purusha sara haravasatam
Napurna upasate purusha sara
haravasatam Please don't go up there. Bhuvi pura punya tirta saranam rishayo vimadas
Bhuvi pura punya tirta saranam rishayo vimadas
Ta utta bhavat padam buja hiroga bidam vrijala
Ta utta bhavat padam buja hiroga bidam
vrijala Tadati sakrin manastraya atmani nitya sukhe
Tadati sakrin manastraya
Napurna upasate purusha shara haravasatam
Napurna upasate purusha shara haravasatam
Bhūhipura Bhūhipuru Punyatita Saranani Risho Vimadas Uta bhavat padam bujahidoga bit angrijalaha Tathati sakrin manastraya atmani nitya sukhe Napuna upasate purusha saraharavasatam Bhuvi, on the earth. Puru, greatly. Punya, pious. Tirtha,
places of pilgrimage.
Saranani, and personal abodes of the Supreme Lord. Rishaya, sages. Vimata, free from false pride. Te, they. Bhuta, indeed. Bhavat, your. Pada, feet. Ambuja, lotus. Rida, in whose hearts. Akha, sins. Hit, which destroys. Angri, having bathed. Whose feet? Jala, the water. Dhati, turn. Sakrit, even once. Mana, their minds. Tvayi, toward you. Ye, who? Atmani, toward the Supreme Soul. Nitya, always. Sukhe, who is happy. Napuna, never again. Upasate, they worship. Purusha, of a man.
Sara,
the essential qualities.
Hara,
which steal away.
Which steal away.
That's interesting. I don't know what that means. Must be interesting. It says here, the word for it says, which steal away. But it doesn't make sense, so I'm assuming that means which steal away. Avasatan, their mundane homes. Translation. Sages, free from false pride, live on this earth by frequenting the sacred pilgrimage sites and those places where the Supreme Lord displayed his pastimes. Because such devotees keep your lotus feet within their hearts, the water that washes their feet destroys all sins. Anyone who even once turns his mind toward you, the ever-blissful soul of all existence, no longer dedicates himself to serving family life at home, which simply robs a man of his good qualities. Please repeat. Sages free from false pride.
Sages free from false pride.
Live on this earth.
Live on this earth.
By frequenting the sacred pilgrimage sites. And those places where the Supreme Lord displayed his pastimes. Because such devotees keep your lotus feet within their hearts. The water that washes their feet destroys all sins. Anyone who even once turns his mind toward you, the ever blissful soul of all existence, no longer dedicates himself to serving family life at home,
to serving family life at home,
which simply robs a man of his good qualities. So this is one of those interesting verses which they're often misunderstood or often misused. There's some interesting verses by Kapila Dev in the third canto. I can't remember if it's chapter 31 or chapter 34, where he's quoting verses that may support, you know, like some devotees will take this verse and say, oh, that means that, you know, that I should give up family life and go live a life of renunciation, just, you know, because actually, you know, it says serving family life at home, which simply robs a man of his good quality. So, you know, if I stay in the well, which some devotees like to call it, and it's under kupam, they're quoting from Prahlad Maharaj, then this will just destroy all my good qualities and I will just go further and further down into material existence. And they like to quote such verses as Dinka Dikini Ratka Bagini Palak Palak Rahuchuse. This is a this kind of interesting verse because it's quoted by Prabhupada from Tulsidas. And, you know, Tulsidas is a famous poet. He used to write, you know, Vaishnava poetry about Lord Krishna and things like that. But then Prabhupada says, he said that Tulsidas had a bad marital experience, so he wrote this verse, sort of, I guess, expressing his frustration in his marital situation. And the verse essentially says, during the daytime, the wife is compared to a witch, and at night she's compared to a tigress, and her only business is to suck the blood of her husband both day and night. So, you know, Tulsidas was frustrated, obviously, by his experience. And it's not to say that everyone in married life is going to experience the same frustration. And we see that if the married life is centered around Krishna consciousness, then actually it's not frustrating. I mean, every situation in this world is frustrating. So how is it that renouncing one situation to go to another situation is going to, you know, help us or help us develop? Because we see that every single situation we approach in this world is we're going to experience some frustration. So it's just as Krishna explains, he says, Makara spasa tukuntaya sitoshna sukha dukata agama bino nishtash tamstitikshasha bharata. But the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress in this material world and their disappearance in due course of time are just like the appearance and disappearance of summer and winter seasons. But, you know, you can go around and speak to maybe, you know, 100 different people about the weather today. And some people, you speak to me and I say, this is freezing cold, I can't tolerate it. You know? And you see some people walking along the beach road there at Beaconsfield Parade in t-shirt and shorts. And you ask them about the weather, oh, it's beautiful weather, I really like it. And just like we see Adam Prabhu, he's got a t-shirt on, you know. I would just freeze to death if I was dressed like you, I just couldn't do it. But for him it's okay. You know? So we see, sensory perception is different. You know, everyone's going to see the same thing in a different way. No two people will see the same thing exactly the same. And a very good example of this, or a demonstration of this, is you read some of the accounts of Srila Prabhupada's manifest pastimes. And different devotees will give different accounts of exactly the same thing. Because they're seeing it from a different angle of vision. Their senses are influencing them in a particular way to see things in a particular way. So therefore, due to their... And we understand the senses are imperfect. So due to their imperfect senses, they will see things in a particular way. Just like when I discuss with my wife, you know, sometimes we say, oh, you know, I like that blue, whatever it was, you know. And I said, I don't think it was blue, I think it was green. You know, so she's seeing colours in a different way than what I see colours, and that's quite common. So it's not unusual that people see things in a different way. So the thing is, like, one may be in a material situation in this world, and this situation is giving us suffering. But we need to understand what generates that suffering. That suffering comes from the contact with the senses with that particular sense object. And because the contact may not necessarily be generating the type of experience we're hoping for, we deem that as being frustration, this is suffering, therefore I should reject it. But we need to understand that whatever situation we experience in this world is going to give us satisfaction and distress, happiness and distress. This is the nature
of this mature world. The mature world is just, you know, designed simply for this, giving us frustration. Because as Krishna says, this is dukkhalaya mashashvatam, this is the nature of everything in this world, is temporary, therefore it produces misery. So it's not, you know, that we should use verses such as this, and many, many verses that are there in the Bhagavatam and various other scriptures where they're pointing out, you know, the frustrations of family life. Just like also Kapila Devi speaks, Teshu, Santeshu, Mudeshu, Kandidashmasu Sadushu. I don't remember the whole verse, a long while since I've sort of read it. These are the kind of verses you learn when you're a young, enthusiastic brahmacharya, and you know, all women are, you know, it's like, I remember one time I was up at New Govardhan, one of the first festivals I went to, and I was with my previous partner at the time, and there was this young, fired-up brahmacharya there, and he was like, you know, whenever a woman was near him, he would spit at their feet, you know, and like, needless to say, he's not around anymore because he offended so many Vaishnavis. Yet, you know, we see like the senses push, you know, it's just natural, the senses push the living entity, especially, you know, for a person who's new to Krishna consciousness, the senses are basically leading us around. And when the object, you know, because we read the Shastra, we understand, oh, this is actually, you know, we have some level of intelligence, we understand that this is not, you know, I should not be allowing my senses to dictate to me terms on how to lead my life and what, you know, what things I should do. So there's like a dilemma for new devotees particularly. They've got this dilemma. It's like the senses are pushing them in one way. The mind or the intelligence has read the Shastra and we see, well, actually, no, this is how I should act. And so they've got this dilemma going on. You know, they're being pushed in one way, but they know they should act in the other way. So generally the tendency is just to reject this thing. This is just, you know, no good. But we see that this is generally what Mayavadis do, is they'll just, you know, because they cannot understand the actual nature of the material world and how it is there to be used in Krishna's senses, they just reject it as being illusion. And so in the same way, when a jiva, it comes into contact with Krishna consciousness and they read the philosophy, yet they're also being afflicted by the senses and seeing, you know, having all this contact with the sense objects and not actually understanding the proper balance, then their tendency is to reject. But usually, this acceptance and rejection is like two extremes. And Srila Prabhupada would say that these are actually the opposite sides of the coin of the mode of passion. One side of the coin of passion is to accept or to indulge, and the other side of the coin of passion is to reject. But one who's actually intelligent sees how these things are meant to be used in Krishna's service. So in the same way we see here with Kapila Devi, he's saying that Kandidatmasa Strishu Dushteshu Vashtaya Jayat, no, that's a different verse. I can't remember it. Anyhow, he's saying how one should not associate with a coarse fool who is bereft of the knowledge of self-realization and is no more than a dancing dog in the hands of a woman. So the point being is, if one is attached to enjoying the senses and has no understanding of spiritual life, then we give up that association. You know, this is you know, strongly emphasized by Rupa Goswami. He points this out where he gives there's two verses there in the beginning of the Nectar of Instruction. In one verse he gives six items that are favorable for the execution of pure devotional service. And one of those things he says is to give up worldly association. What's that verse? Another verse, first line.
Which one?
That's the one, that's the things we give up. What's the ones that are favourable? Utsahan nishya daya tat kamrabhatana. Sangotyaga satobrite. He says sangotyaga. We give up. You give up this association which is, you know, unfavorable for the execution of pure devotional service. And in the next verse he says, Aktihar Vrayasas Cha Prajalpa Niyamagaha Jana Sangas Chololyam Cha. He says, is this Jana Sangas, this worldly association, this is unfavorable for the execution of pure devotional service. So he's emphasizing that this association is very, very important. If we associate with worldly minded persons, it's going to affect us. And we will also become worldly minded. However, if we associate with sadhus, if we associate with saintly persons, this will help us to be affected in this way. So we're very much influenced. And this is the point that's being, one of the points that's being emphasized here in this verse, is sages free from false pride live on this earth by frequenting the sacred pilgrimage sites and those places wherein the Supreme Lord displays his pastimes. So they're doing that for different reasons. It is obviously they're going to the pilgrimage places because they want to hear about Krishna's pastimes. They want to remember the places where the Lord enacted his pastimes. Just like when you go to Vrindavan, personally I like to walk around the cowherd boy trail, and there's many nice places where you can, it sort of follows the Jamuna around most of the way around Vrindavan, because the Jamuna sort of comes in then circles around Vrindavan and circumambulates in the auspicious manner, which is very interesting. It almost goes a full circle all the way around Vrindavan. And so there's many nice places there where Krishna performed his pastimes, and there's also many samadhis, because when you come around the back of the temple and where the trail goes now, that used to actually be the course of the Jamuna. And I remember the first few times I went to Vrindavan, the Jamuna sometimes was still flowing down there, and there was even some old bridges which have now been disassembled. But so there's many samadhis of various personalities. There's places like Kali Khrada, where there's a beautiful deity there, a self-manifesting deity. That was carved by, I think it was either carved by Brajanava, or Brajanava had it carved or something. I can't remember the detail of its history there. But that's just near the place, near Kaliya Ghat, where Krishna was dancing upon the head of Kaliya. And he curbed his pride. But there's a beautiful deity of Kaliya Khrada where you can actually see the same thing, where he's dancing on the head of Kaliya. And there's the Samadhi of Prabodhananda Saraswati, and all these different various pastimes. And you go there and you remember how Krishna was performing this pastime. You remember how the devotees were interacting with Krishna. So this is one of the reasons we go to the Dham, is to actually help us to engage in remembering the pastimes of Krishna. And this remembrance also has many wonderful effects. The devotees, they discuss these things amongst each other, so we're engaging Krishna Katha. But also, to hear the pastimes of Krishna is a very, very purifying thing. As it's mentioning in many places throughout the Bhagavatam, particularly in the first canto, it points out how by there's regularly discussing the pastimes of the Lord. This is by regular attendance in the past of the Srimad Bhagavatam. All these things are troublesome to the heart, are almost destroyed to nil, and loving devotional service, the personality of God, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So by this process of say, for instance, going to the Dham and hearing the pastimes, remembering, there's so many lovely places you can go to, thousands and thousands of places in Vrindavan you can go to. Everywhere you go to, practically, there is a place of pastime where Krishna did something, or where the great devotees did something. You can go out to Radha Kund and you can see the place where Krishnadas Kaviraj sat and wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Or there's a place where in Vrindavan, along the Parikrama Mark, when you're coming back around, where you go all the way around Vrindavan, you're coming back around, you suddenly come back up to Krishna, but you leave the Jamuna's course and you come back up towards the Krishna Balaram temple before you cross the Mathura road. And there's a place there where there's a deity of Vyasadeva. And who is this paying obeisance? Do you know who's paying obeisances? There's a devotee there paying obeisances to him. I can't remember who that is. Maybe it's Sukadeva Goswami, I think. Anyhow, so that's said to be the place where Vyasadeva came to Vrindavan to write the 10th canto. The other cantos of the Bhagavatam were written elsewhere, but the 10th canto was actually written in Vrindavan at that spot. So it just sort of assists our remembrance of these things, and we can become more and more absorbed. But also, devotees go to the places of pilgrimage to associate. Because this association of the Vaishnavas is considered to be one of the most important elements in our development in Krishna consciousness, as we were saying before, like Rupa Goswami points out, to give up the association of worldly minded people, but also to associate with the Vaishnavas. Sadhu Sangha, Shava Shastra Khoi, Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Khoi. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it points out that it's the verdict of all the revealed scriptures, and even a moment's association with a sadhu can give one complete success. So, you know, we see that, you know, in the Dham, who do you find there? You find devotees of Krishna. The devotees of Krishna congregate in the Dham because they want to, you know, go and visit the places of pastimes. They want to hear about the pastimes of the Lord. And they want to associate with the devotees. And the Dham is a very special place in that because it is the place where Krishna performs his pastimes, we can understand it's not actually a worldly place. It's not a place of this world. And it's understood that when Krishna descends to this world, he descends with his Dham. Just like you can see, you know, if you go to France, there's a river there called the Loire River. And I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it right because French pronunciations for me is very difficult. I'm sure for French people it's very easy. You know? But there's this valley that runs through the middle of France, and there's a river called the Loire River, and there's a certain section where they call the Valley of Kings, and there's all these chateaus there, these, you know, very beautiful large chateaus, you know. And what the kings would do is they would like move with their whole court, you know, they build this chateau and they move with their whole court, you know, all the people who attend the court, you know, their ministers or whatever you call them, all their wives, their family, their animals, the whole thing. They just moved from one chateau and they just moved the whole place to the next chateau. And then they'd have another chateau built somewhere else. And then when that was finished, they'd move there. And they just keep moving from one chateau to the other. You know? So we see that Krishna does a similar thing, but when he descends, he doesn't just come with all his associates and his family members and, you know, his friends, etc. like that. He descends with his whole planet. He does it in a much grander way. You know, his Dham, the spiritual realm, actually comes here. So when we go visiting these places, just by the very atmosphere purifies us. And it's said that when we perform devotional service in the Dham, the effect of that devotional service is magnified 1,000 times. So very, very powerful. And we see, you know, and some, you know, the, primarily for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, there's three dharmas that are significant for us, and this is because their association with the pastimes of Krishna and the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, and that is Vrindavan, Mayapur, and Puri. Jagannath Puri, these dharmas are very, very significant. So, you know, devotees regularly go and visit these dharmas. And the different dharmas, they have different moods. Like we see with Mayapur, Vrindavan dharma, the mood of Vrindavan is Madhurya. Everything in Vrindavan is imbued with this sweetness. Madhurya means sweetness, this sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. And whereas we see in Mayapur Dham, its mood is Udharya. So this Udharya is like merciful nature. So in Vrindavan we must be very, very careful because we perform activities in the Dham. You know, just like you perform some spiritual activity, you get 1,000 times the benefit. It's said that if you perform some sinful activity, you get 1,000 times the reaction. So we must be very careful when we go to places like Vrindavan too. You know. But then with Mayapur, this consideration is not the same. You get, you know, you just get 1,000 times the benefit. No matter what you do, you get 1,000 times the benefit. But Mayapur Dham is very, very merciful in so much that even if you go to Mayapur Dham and you lie down to sleep in Mayapur Dham, you get the benefit of paying obeisances in the Dham. So it's very interesting how Mayapur Dham functions. This is the mood of Lord Chaitanya. Even there's one story of when they were getting the deity of Nrisimhadeva carved, this Ugra Nrisimha, a particularly fearsome form is called Stana Ugra Nrisimha. So Stana means the column. And, you know, like you see that painting, I don't know which, you know, that painting of Nrisimhadeva that was there in the seventh canto where he's got Hiranyakashipu over his lap and he's ripping out his intestines. So devotees, they actually were thinking that's the form we want because that's the most fearsome form of Nrisimhadeva. So when they went to the Stapati, or the Stapati is a person who makes deities, and they asked him to carve this deity, he said, we want the most fearsome form, we want him when he's ripping out Hiranyakashipu's intestines, you know. And actually the Stapati said, no, actually this is not the most fearsome form of Nrisimhadeva. The most fearsome form of Nrisimhadeva is just when he bursts out of the pillar. Because when he bursts out of the pillar, he's been so moved to anger, you know, he's been so sort of angry that he's actually moved to do something. He's jumped out of the pillar and he's looking, where's that demon? I'm going to rip him apart. Mm-hmm. You know? And so you see that the deity of Nrisimhadeva in Mayapur, his legs are bent. You know, he's like, his knees are bent. You know, his legs are bent. His knees are bent. And he's like ready to pounce. and he's got his claws up, and his, you know, teeth are ferocious like that. So when the devotees went to the Sthapati and they asked him to carve this, he said, "No, I will not carve this deer." He was too scared. And apparently there have been other deities of Sthana Upanishad Sringa in places in South India, and because of some discrepancies in the worship, the whole town has become wiped out. You know, so this Sthapati was just not at all interested in carving. But then he went and saw his guru, and his guru explained to him, and he said, "Oh, who's this deity for?" He said, "Oh, this deity is for ISKCON." He said, "Oh, that is all right then, you can carve it for ISKCON," because he explained that the deity, because he's going to be worshipped in Mayapur, will take on the mood of Lord Chaitanya. So we see that this deity of Ugnana Singh is a very, very, very merciful deity. And so the Dham, everything in the Dham, is very much influenced by Lord Chaitanya's this Namo Mahabha, this Mahabhadanyaya, this most munificent incarnation. Because Lord Chaitanya has this mood of just wanting to give everyone the benefit of devotional service, the benefit of chanting Hare Krishna. You know, it says in the Shastastika, you know, that there's no rules or regulations in the chanting of Hare Krishna. And so Lord Chaitanya has very much taken this mood of just trying to, you know, freely distribute, it says in his pranam mantra, that you freely distribute that which no other incarnation has ever, this love of Krishna. So this is the mood that Lord Chaitanya has taken. And, you know, he's eagerly distributing this love of Godhead to one and all. So the benefits of visiting the Dham should never be minimized or underestimated. And actually, we see that Prabhupada in his Krishna book, when he's discussing this verse here, he quotes from Prahlad Maharaj in the 5th chapter of the 7th canto, when Hiranyakashipu he came to Prahlad Maharaj, he said to him, "My dear son, what is the best of all knowledge you've learnt from your teachers?" And then as Prabhupada quotes this verse a lot. And because Prahlad Maharaj refers to to Hiranyakashipu, he calls his father Suryavarya. Asuravarya, yeah? Oh, best of the demons. Refers to him as the best of the demons. But Prabhupada quotes this a lot of times. You know? You listen to some of the classes he gave in Los Angeles in 1976, and he's just constantly quoting this point. And he points out that he says, the best of all knowledge is like, you know, he's saying that, you know, like, he talks about people who are accepting the body as the self and how they're, like, conditioned in material life and that actually they're going to be dragged down by this conditioning. And he says, actually, I think the best thing for you is to go and live in the forest, to give up your worldly attachments and go live in the forest. And Prabhupada, he quotes this, or he adds information into the translation. He said, actually, when it says Vana, it's actually referring to Vrindavan. So he's telling his father to go live in Vrindavan because he thinks it's the best thing for him, because he's attached to worldly life. He's attached to family. He's attached to, you know, all the facilities provided by family life. So it's the same thing is there for devotees, you know, and this verse is particularly applicable in the sense is that if we become overly attached to material facilities, if we become overly attached to the facilities provided by Grihastha life, then we're in the same situation. Because those facilities will not assist us in our development of God consciousness. This is the whole purpose. This is why it's called Grihastha Ashram. It's meant to give us shelter from the onslaught of modes of material nature. You know, because, you know what it's like. We're living in a big city. This is not the forest. You know? This is, or sometimes it's called a forest, a concrete jungle. It's a big city, and we're being constantly attacked by the objects of the senses. There's so much advertising. You know, if you watch television, you'll see there's so much advertising. Even you walk down the street, you know, there's so many billboards there with naked bodies on them, both men and women. They're constantly sort of saying, you know, you can, if you go into debt with this bank, you can have this wonderful facility. You know, they're like when they're releasing some new products, they try to heighten the perception of the value of this useless piece of plastic and metal. You know, just like there was a recent thing of one of these computer companies bought out a new phone, and just the way they hype it up to present it as being that this is the product you've always waited for. You know, and it's just the way the advertising industry works is they just try to, they know people's weaknesses. They know they're addicted to their senses. So they use the senses. They use people's senses to draw them in. They use their senses to get their emotions worked up. So you'll put your hand in your pocket, you'll take your wallet out, and you'll give them some money. And they just use it all the time. So people, because they're allured by their senses, they become addicted. They become attached to all these different things. Now, for devotees, we need to be aware of what's going on in this material world. How the material energy is trying to lure us. It's just like fishing. You know, when I was a young man, we used to go fishing in Rockhampton. I lived in Rockhampton, and we used to go fishing. We used to use these things called lures. Yeah, and it's just like a shiny thing, you know, and it's got a little metal thing on it that sort of, you know, we used to go fishing for barramundi. I'm kind of, you know, ashamed to think of it now, but just to use an example. And they have these shiny little metal things on them to attract the attention of the fish. You know, you think, because the fish is not so intelligent, it sees something shiny, it's attracted, it bites it automatically. I remember years ago my brother was down at Point Cook, and there was barracuda. And barracuda are voracious eaters. So what the way they would do it is they just have a line with maybe 10 or 15 hooks on it, right? And they just put a piece of alfoil on each hook. They lower it down into the water, then bring it back up, and there'd be all these fish on it, because it's allured by something shiny. And you think, well, that's because they're less intelligent. That's true, they are less intelligent. They're so easily, you know, they don't stop to think. There's a hook there, and I'll be caught. But are we any less intelligent? You know, a little piece of plastic, they make it look shiny, they put a few little fancy, you know, like buttons and things there, and we think, wow, I gotta have it. You know? Or maybe you see, you know, a young man or a young woman dressed up in really nice clothes and acting in a provocative way, and think, wow, I gotta have it. Yeah? Or the advertising agencies, they present a particular intoxication in a certain way, and they package it very nicely. Like you go to the supermarket, you see the home brand, you see the other brand, you know, with the fancy colours on it. What's the difference? It's the same thing. Inside the packet, it's exactly the same thing. It washes your clothes exactly the same way, but because this packet looks nicer, people buy it. And they pay more money for it too. Yeah? Because of packaging, because of promotion. Yeah? So that's all it is. The material world is just a matter of packaging. Matra spasas to kuntia. It's just sensory perception. Because your senses are attracted. Why are there so many different brands on the market? You know, you can go to places in you know, like various markets in India, for instance. You go to Bombay. There's a puja market there. And like block after block after block, they're selling puja ingredients. And they're all selling exactly the same things. Why is it there's hundreds of shops selling exactly the same things? Why don't we just have one shop? And everyone's satisfied by one shop. No, because of people's senses. They think, this person's giving me a better deal. Or they may think that, well, you know, the way it's presented, no, this is a better product. Same product. But because of our senses, because there's so much variety in the senses, they package things in a different way. And the living entities are lured. They're lured by this packaging, by the shining lights. You know, there used to be a song years ago, "Bright lights, big city, went to my baby's head." And we see that's what happens. People come, you know, people come from the country. The agrarian lifestyle, the Vedic culture promotes agrarian lifestyle. Why? Because it's more suited to developing the mode of goodness. What's the importance of the mode of goodness? The mode of goodness is essential in order for us to be able to contemplate, you know, the Supreme Personality of God, to be able to contemplate the nature of the self. But we see that the city, in the city, there's all these allurements to draw people into the city, to engage in sense gratification, to engage in, you know, all these nonsense activities. And it's just based on attracting people's senses. So we need to see that. Material nature is simply based on trying to allure your senses. Enjoy this, enjoy that. It's all it's about. Yeah? Doesn't matter what it is, how nicely packaged it is the same thing. There's the expression, old wine in a new bottle. I mean, how many times do they repackage things? Same thing. And what do? They write, new so-and-so. But the only thing that's new is the label. Yeah? And what do? They sell it, they put it in a different packet, they sell it for, you know, 10 to 20% more. And it's exactly the same thing. Or the other thing they do, is this is a really clever marketing thing they do, right? It's like, because I used to work in Coles when I was a young boy, and I'd see this all the time. The price would go up, up, They push it up, you know, few cents every month, right? And then they have the end of the year sale, and they bring it back down to the price it was at the start of the last year, right? And they present it as being, look, this is on sale right now. Yeah. So it's just you know, they're preying on people's weaknesses. That's all it really is. And the material nature does, you know, the marketing executives and the material nature are doing exactly the same thing. Because people are addicted to enjoying their senses, they prey on it. So as devotees, we need to be aware this is what's happening in this world. You know, the material nature is doing it, the marketing executives are doing it. Yeah. And we need to see what's happening and work on becoming aloof from this. By the application of the process of Krishna consciousness, we need to, you know, focus on developing our awareness of the way the material nature acts, the way my senses, how my senses are afflicting me. You know? We need to see how the mind is working. This is, you know, the process of Krishna consciousness is all about contemplating, not all about, but a big part of the process of Krishna consciousness is contemplating how I am affected by the modes of material nature, how my mind is afflicting me, how my intelligence, because my intelligence is influenced by the modes of material nature, how is it pushing me to act? And this is why cultivating the mode of goodness is very important, because as you cultivate the mode of goodness, you start to discriminate between what is the influence of the senses, what is the influence of the mind, and what is the influence of the intelligence, and what is really me. So by cultivating the motive, because it says, you know, when all the gates of the body are illumined with knowledge, one actually sees the self as he is, and the supersoul is situated, and the supersoul situated within. So when the body, the gates of the body become illumined with knowledge, means we're seeing things how they should be utilized. You know, to say that all the gates of the body are illumined with knowledge, that doesn't mean that, you know, my ears are knowing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, it means that I'm knowing how to utilize these things in Krishna's service. So cultivation of goodness means that we actually, we're utilizing things more and more in the service of Krishna and less and less in the service of the senses. So cultivate goodness is actually very, very important in the development of Krishna consciousness. I read some of the purport. There's a few interesting points made here in the purport. And actually Prabhupada, he makes quite a few good points also. Lots of good points in his comment on this, and primarily he's quoting from Prahlada Maharaj from the 7th canto, 5th chapter. The qualification of aspiring sage is he has learnt about the absolute truth from standard authorities and developed a sober mood of renunciation. Because actually Lord Chaitanya, he points out, you know, these two very important points is mentioned right here. What are those two important points? Just in that first sentence.
Huh? Have a sober mood of renunciation.
So knowledge and renunciation. It says Vairagya Vidyanija Bhakti Yoga Shishashtame Kampura Shampurana Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sarina Dari Kripamburi Yashtam Maham Prabhade. That Lord Chaitanya, he came to teach knowledge and renunciation. This is what, you know, this is the development of emotional service, to understand, as it's said here, to learn about the absolute truth. From standard authorities, not that we just make up our own ideas. We go get a book from the bookshop, you know, and you've got to get all these self-help books and stuff like that, and I can read up and learn how, you know, all about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No, there is a system. Eram parampara praptam imam rajaya sevidu. Lord Krishna points that out. It's like, you know, the knowledge is passed down from guru to disciple. And the example is sometimes given there is very, very interesting, because when you get mangoes are very, very soft and they can easily be bruised. You know, if one drops on the ground, it's smashed, you know. And so the example sometimes is given is like if you pick, because on the top of the tree, that's where they get the most sun, so they're usually the ripest and the sweetest fruits. So you pick the fruit and you pass it, there's all people in the branches, you pass it carefully down from one person to the next, to the next, to the next, and finally it gets to you down on the ground. So this is used as an example to understand how the knowledge is passed down carefully in a way that's you know, helping us to understand the knowledge more effectively. And then also to develop this sober mood of renunciation, this mood of wanting to give up my attachment to the material modes of nature, to enjoying in this world enjoying the material nature. To develop his capacity for discriminating the important from the unimportant, such a person often wanders from one holy site to another, taking advantage of the association of great souls
who frequent or reside in these places. If in the course of his travels the aspiring sage can begin to realize the Supreme Lord's lotus feet in the core of his heart, he will be released from the illusion of false ego and from painful bondage, or from the painful bondage of lust, envy, and greed. Though he may still go to places of pilgrimage to bathe away his sins, the now purified sage has the power to sanctify others with the water that washes his feet and with the realized instructions he imparts. It touches on something that's very interesting there. It's actually considered from the Guru, there's three very important things that the disciple is always hankering for. One is the water that washes his lotus feet. The other is the dust from the feet. Or the places of worship, things of worship is the water that washes the feet, the dust from his feet, and the sitting place. These things are considered very, very worshipful. So the disciple would never sit on the Guru's sitting place. This is not considered to be the Guru's asana. This is the speaker's asana. Whereas if the Guru, like we see Srila Prabhupada has a Vyasasana there, the disciple would never. It would be considered very offensive for a disciple to sit on Srila Prabhupada's Vyasasana. So it's the same with the Guru. If he has a specific asana that's his asana, then the disciple wouldn't sit on that. It would be considered disrespectful. And then with the water and the dust, we take them on our heads and worship things like that. But also, it's talking about here. It brings up an interesting point that the pilgrimage, he goes to the pilgrim goes to a sacred place to it mentions in the Bhagavatam, it says yashatma buddhi kuna pe tridatuke swadi kalatrajish bhava di bhava ijadi janeshu abhigit. What's the last half of that? So basically what it's pointing out is that those persons who go to the place of pilgrimage simply to bathe there are considered to be no better than yashatma buddhe kunape tridatuke. They consider the body to be the self, the body made of the three elements, tridatuke. Means like the three elements, bile, mucus, air. This is the self. Swadi, kala, tradition. They're kala, the family members. They're considering them to be like non-different from self. This is my family. Boma, ijadi. Different acharyas give different translations on this. Prabhupada translated this essentially as meaning considering the land of birth to be worshipable. Yeah? And then it says, then they go to the place of pilgrimage only to bathe there with the idea to wash away their sins. That's the thing. I just go there, I bathe in the sacred rivers, and I dump all my sins there. Haribol, then I go home. But actually the purpose of going to a holy place, just like people come here to the temple, they go here, then they come before the deities and they want this benediction, that benediction, they just take away all my sins, help my son become a university graduate, so I can benefit from all the money he'll make and this thing and that thing. This is not actually the purpose of visiting a holy place. It says that the real purpose of visiting a holy place is to hear the instructions of the saintly persons. Because with these instructions, one can actually, traverse the path back to Godhead. If we're simply going there just to get some benefit, it's actually a material exchange. In the same as Prahlad Maharaj, when after Nrisingadev had killed Hiranyakashipu, then Nrisingadev said to Prahlad Maharaj, "I'll give you any benediction you like now. Whatever you want, I'll give it to you." And he was in a sense, he was disappointed. He said, "My lord, I think this to be no better than a business transaction." He said, "I'm not interested in that. I simply want that others will get the benefit of your devotional service." So he's a transcendentalist. So a person who's mundane will come to the temple or go to a holy place simply to get some benefit, simply for their own benefit. They just want to get something from it. They either want to get some benediction from the sadhu. One funny story just came to mind. Prabhupada was traveling on a train one time, and as is often the case with saintly persons, people would come and ask them for blessings. So these men, they came up and they asked Prabhupada for blessings, and Prabhupada was not very much interested. And then, so they persisted, and several times they asked, and then Prabhupada, he pointed to his sannyasi disciples and said, "These are my benedictions. Do you want that?" And they were not interested. They didn't want to be renunciates.
They're just wanting some material benediction so they can have a better life, a better materialistic life. But this is actually not the purpose of devotional service. The purpose of devotional service is to, you know, progressively develop our attachment for Krishna and to traverse the path of self-realization back to the spiritual realm, back to Krishna service. And we see that the highest level of devotee is that actually their whole life is simply aimed at the satisfaction of Krishna. They don't even consider their own sensory enjoyment. They don't consider their own satisfaction. They just simply want to, the residents of Vrindavan, they simply want to please Krishna. That's all they want to do. So this is not, you know, at least this is not my level of realization, but I'm, you know, we're working on that path towards developing that realization. So you see, we don't go to the place of pilgrimage just to bathe, but we go there really to perform devotional service and to hear knowledge, to hear, you know, realized knowledge from the great transcendentalists. This is the primary place. And then the purport continues. Such a sage is described in the Mundaka Upanishad. Vidyate hridaye krantis, chidyante sarasangshaya, kriyante chashakaramani, tasmin dishte para vare. The translation of that. The knot in the heart is pierced, all misgivings are cut to pieces, and the chain of fruitive actions is terminated when one sees the Supreme Lord everywhere within all superior and inferior things. Now this is interesting because a very similar verse appears in the second chapter of the first canto. It's the same first three lines, and the last line is just te eva manishvare, I think, from memory. And it's saying, you know, same thing as the knot in the heart is pierced, all misgivings are cut to pieces, and the chain of reactions is terminated when one sees the self as master. Yeah? When one sees, what's that saying? See the self as master, that actually I'm God? Some people will interpret it like that. Oh, seeing myself as master means God, I am God. But actually it means seeing that, no, the senses, the mind, intelligence, they are not my master. No, I am the master of this body. And I, you know, determine how the body is used in Krishna service. So it's saying that Mundaka Upanishad, the sages who have reached this stage, the Mundaka Upanishad thus pays homage. It says, the Maha Parama Paramarishibhya, says that twice, obeisances to the topmost sages, obeisances. So when a person's actually, you know, achieved this stage of development, then even the scriptures are offering obeisances to them because they're actually giving their lives to the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the purport continues on. Putting aside the affectionate company of wives, children and friends and followers, saintly Vaishnavas travel to the holy dharmas where the Supreme Lord's worship can be most successfully prosecuted. Places such as Vrindavan, Mayapur and Jagannath Puri, or anywhere else where sincere devotees of the Lord congregate. Even those Vaishnavas who have not taken sannyas and still live at home or in their guru's ashram, but who have once tasted just a drop of the sublime pleasure of devotional service, will also have little inclination to meditate on the pleasures of materialistic family life, which robs a person of his discretion, determination, sobriety, tolerance, and peace of mind. So we see that's what happens to people who are, you know, I was walking down this street the other day, you know, in Melbourne, and you know, someone was just like standing there looking at something in a shop there, and this guy was obviously very agitated in some way or another, you know. And he was like trying to get through with all his stuff, you know, he had a vacuum cleaner and this and that. And this other person, I think this other person didn't even see him, you know, from what I could see. And this guy was just really frustrated, just pushed the person in the back like that, really violently. You know, and then, you know, an altercation resulted. And we see like people in this world are so disturbed, they're so agitated. You know, and it's saying here, you know, because they don't have inclination, you know, towards, you know, serving Krishna, and they're just trying to increase their pleasures more and more and more, then this is exactly what's going on. They lose their discretion, their determination, their sobriety, tolerance, and peace of mind. They have no peace of mind. They're completely disturbed. They have no sobriety. Practically speaking, they're always intoxicated. And this is, you know, simply because they have this pursuit of trying to enjoy their senses. And this is not what human life is meant for. Then that quote from Sri Aswami, quite a long verse. My dear Lord,
When will I give up all sense gratification and engage incessantly in meditating upon you? And when will I take up residence in the hermitages of saintly devotees, free from false pride? Then I will become fully immersed in the inundation of nectar pouring from the devotees' lotus mouths as they chant sacred narrations about you. And then, O Lord Narahari, I will never again have to take a material body. It's a very interesting verse also by Sridhar Swami, where he's saying the nectar. You know, Krishna's pastimes are absolute nectar. There is every drop. Sometimes these different narrations you can read, sometimes different devotees, like, you know, you hear Bhakti Charu Maharaj when he speaks Bengali and he speaks all these, like, these beautiful pastimes, just like little drops of honey coming out of his mouth. You know, Radhanath Maharaj, I remember years ago I went on a Prakrama with Radhanath Maharaj, and we're just visiting all the major Prakram places, and it's very interesting with Radhanath Maharaj. When he tells stories about the pastimes of Krishna, basically he's just telling stories out of the Krishna book. And the way he presents the stories, you feel like you're actually there in the pastime. He presents it like it's going on around you, and it's just so nice. It's just nectar for a devotee. This is nectarian, you know. Of course, for non-devotees, they think, oh, you know, why are you guys getting so caught up in these fairy tales? Mm-hmm. They just don't see it as being real. But you know, for devotees, they derive, you know, it was the tushanti charamanti, they derive great satisfaction and bliss by always enlightening one another and conversing about Krishna's pastimes. So for devotees, this is how we find our satisfaction. We don't need to, you know, read mundane books, you know, mundane storybooks, these novels and things, and so much useless paper, you know, waste of paper. Mills and Boon. I remember my mother used to have piles and piles of these Mills and Boon books, you know, just all these like stories about romances and things like that, you know, it was a waste of paper. Pulp fiction, just a waste of paper. Much better else, you know, much better use doing something else with it. You know. So we don't waste our time with all this like useless information. No, we derive pleasure from hearing about Krishna's pastimes. The devotees, they derive pleasure from discussing, reading about Krishna. And it's like this thing here, they're just like, it's just like nectar. And not just dropping, it's pouring out. Because we see, you listen to Prabhupada, he was just constantly talking about Krishna. The nectar was just constantly flowing. You know? And he was always, you know, everything he would do, he'd be driving down the road, and somehow later, you know, like in Sydney one time, he was driving down the road and he saw the sign that said Parramatta Road. Nunam pramapta kurute vikarma. Straight away he's connecting that to Krishna, saying these people are just mad after materialistic life. Yeah. So great devotees are like that. They just just constantly discussing. They're immersed in the pastimes of Krishna, and they're constantly discussing the pastimes of Krishna. And in this way, those who have that association, those who come into contact with them, are also enlivened in Krishna consciousness. So this verse is talking about, you know, the great sages and how they're traveling and giving their association. So, you know, devotees get great benefit from receiving that association. You know, so either when you know, the advanced devotees, when they come to the temple, they're giving glasses, then we should always try to avail ourselves of their association, try to render service, be sure, you know, we hear them discuss the philosophy, you know, be eager to ask them questions about the philosophy, about Krishna's pastimes. Because it's said that, you know, it's just like in the Gita, it says, Tadviti Pranipatina Pariprishnena Sevya Upadekshantite Gyanas Gyanas Tapadasha. He says, the self-realized souls, they can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. But in order for them to impart that knowledge, there's some prerequisites that need to be there. Pariprishnena Sevya, this is a submissive inquiry and service. If we don't have this, you know, mood of submissive inquiry and service to the great souls, then they're not going to feel so much inclined to impart knowledge. So there's a certain onus upon us to take up the right service attitude, to take up the right mood of inquiry. You know, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, 115, it also says, you know, like when someone's giving class, then we present questions to them in the proper mood in order to elicit the clear understanding, not in a challenging mood. Because, you know, if you challenge someone, why should they bother? You know, like, I've got better things to do with my time. And so the idea is like, you know, and this is actually, you know, to cultivate humility. What, you know, this is a very, very powerful quality. And Prabhupada, he says in the 13th chapter of Gita, is that the key to knowledge is humility.
So when we have this opportunity, when you know, great saintly devotees are visiting, just like, you know, Purushanta was visiting at the end of the week, isn't it? Honey? Thursday he's coming. So we have this opportunity, a great saintly person is visiting the temple, to actually, you know, inquire from him, to understand, you know, the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, to develop our attachment. And it's up to us, you know, the way we serve that person, the way we inquire from them, you know, it helps us to develop more and more in our Krishna consciousness. So, you know, very important, you know, to understand that one of the vital keys, if you like, to developing Krishna consciousness is this association of saintly persons. Okay, so finished there. Any questions at all? Okay.